Hello, welcome to another edition of Robinson Ralph's Having a Natter with me, Simon Robinson, it's always.
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody, unless you're listening to this before midday
or
after, say, 6 p.m., in which case, good morning, stroke, evening, you select the greeting as you wish.
So you're very much doing a Truman Show type introduction there. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and I'll see you later, good night.
Yeah.
I might not be quoting that right. So
no.
Truman fan shows, please don't write in. I don't want to get cancelled for that.
I might not be remembering it at all.
No,
so
no.
There you go. I couldn't correct you.
Thanks. And that's all I ever hoped for.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll do the banter bit now.
Banter bit, yeah. So, it was Easter weekend, wasn't it? Just recently.
It was, yeah.
I went up to Edinburgh. My eldest is a uni up there. And I think I caught a dust allergy from being in his flat.
Oh,
it was utterly repulsive.
Yeah, I remember being a student. it's not the most hygienic.
No, it was horrific. My youngest commented that he was probably going to get hepatitis C from using the toilet.
That's good.
Which was a fair comment.
Yeah, that was good banter from you. My banter's not as good as you. We went to, we took the kids up to Northumberland and stayed in a little cottage there. That was good.
Yeah, did you get any Easter eggs?
I didn't, but the kids did.
You didn't get any at all?
No. Do you get Easter eggs?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Did you not even get any little sort of, like, maybe a mini eggs?
No. Well,
bag
I stole some from the kids, obviously, but I didn't officially get any. When they weren't looking, I nicked them and then blamed the other one. and then I went to see Frankie Boyle last night in a show, not just at his house.
Yeah. Yeah. And you had tickets to the show as well.
Tickets to the show.
Looking through the window.
Tickets to the show. So that's what.
A bit funny.
Yes.
Good.
So
that's all you want, really, from a comedy show.
Yeah. I don't know what else you'd expect, to be honest.
Deep, profound, maybe.
That's more Stuart Lee territory.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
So we didn't have that. And nothing else.
Well, that's good. Banter
section
over then.
Complete.
Yeah.
So let's move on. What case are we talking about today, Mr.
So
S?
We're going to talk about McLaren against Highflow.
Finally.
Or Hiflow. I suspect Highflow.
Yeah.
Property Services.
Yes.
And it was a employment tribunal case in Scotland.
Yeah.
Headline is that it was a pregnancy discrimination case.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, the claimant was successful. And I'm going to just briefly explain the fact.
I'd love that.
And also point out, perhaps, not that it takes much legal analysis to point out what the respondent perhaps did wrong in terms of a case preparation perspective. And then, Simon, you're going to explain the judgment.
Oh,
aren't you? So that's something to look forward to.
If you've got nothing else to look forward to.
Of course, for the next 20 minutes. You do know there are other podcasts you could be listening to.
I don't know what they're doing.
I mean, we could be listening to other podcasts rather than recording this.
We're everything. You know when people make fun of people who make podcasts?
Yeah.
We're the people they're thinking of.
Yeah. Yelling into the ether, hoping that somebody's listening.
This is so pointless.
Yeah. Yeah, are we onto a billion streams yet? I suspect not.
Do you imagine how much more enjoyable this would be if anyone listened to it?
Not for them.
not
for the people who currently aren't listening to it.
I mean, I know you and I don't enjoy doing it.
No. So, McLaren and Highflow Property Services on that bombshell. So, in terms of case preparation, as I said, it was a pregnancy discrimination claim. The respondent, in terms of presenting its claim, had attached a couple of witness statements from two employees to the response form, and then turned up with one of those witnesses at the final hearing, which meant that, as the tribunal said, one of those statements would have very little weight placed on it.
Like weird of a feather, maybe.
Exactly. I mean, can you guess which one it was? The witness who didn't turn up or the witness who did turn up?
Decision
witness
maker.
Who didn't turn up. Well, just in terms of who was going to have the weight placed on them. I think it was the office supervisor attend. So the person who held the meetings.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
No, but what it, you know,
can
what
I
it
did get, mean, can was, I another guess? Hang on.
Yeah.
Was it the office supervisor?
Yeah, they didn't attend.
That's
yeah.
just because I know what I'm talking yeah. about. That's how I can guess stuff.
Now, I've spoken to people before who've had tribunal claims and suggested that if they wanted to get some advice, that's fine. And they've talked to me about what they're doing to prepare. And they've said, we think we've got such a good case, we probably won't call any witnesses.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Right, okay. Yeah. You do need to call witnesses because yeah. that is how the evidence is given.
It's given, yeah. And I've spoken to people before as well.
Yeah, well, only when it's unavoidable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the other problem that the tribunal pointed out was that neither party produced any documents to be referred to in their evidence, ugh. Even though it became clear that the company had made note to the disciplinary meeting that the warning was issued in writing and there was subsequent correspondence regarding the appeal of the warning. I don't think there was any letter about the dismissal. But yeah, that will be important evidence for the tribunal to take into yeah. account. Now, neither party had produced that, but ordinarily you might expect the respondent to get some form of legal advice, and they didn't, and bear in mind that they did lose. And also the way they presented their claim, the tribunal said that Ms. Donaldson asked the claimant only a small number of questions in cross-examination. The judge intervened to explain that maybe they wanted to perhaps ask some more questions, because if they didn't challenge any evidence, then it would be taken as unchallenged, surprisingly. The respondent appears not to have taken that on board to the appropriate extent. Tribunal said that where there was any dispute of facts, ultimately they found for the claimants one of the reasons was that, one, they found her to be a credible and reliable witness. Yeah. The second was that the evidence wasn't challenged on significant issues, also failure to produce documents, and just a wholesale lack in the evidence that was put to the claimant is how the tribunal described it. In terms of giving evidence, the tribunal found the claimant to be a credible and reliable witness. And the only reason they give for doing that is they say she was willing to accept when she could not recall precise details of events. So a little lesson there for anybody who might be giving evidence in a tribunal. If the answer to the question is, I can't recall or I don't know, that is the answer to the question.
What's your name?
Nobody ever told me.
I find you to be a credible witness. Ooh,
thank you. yeah, and it's much better to give an upfront, honest answer, even if that is, I can't remember what happened, than to try and make up. Something.
Or answer the question you wish had been yes. asked rather than the one you're being asked.
Yes, indeed. So in terms of the facts of the claim, well, the claimant was employed as an administrator. She was only employed for a year and three quarters, so she didn't have the right to claim ordinary unfair dismissal. The respondent was a small business with 19 employees, and the claimant's job involved booking jobs for engineers and other administrative duties. The company was sort of gas, heating and plumbing engineering company. So on the 31st of July 2023, the claimant informed one of the directors that she was pregnant. They apparently offered no particular congratulations. During August of that year, the director informed the claimant that she would have to take holidays when she needed time off for any appointments related to her pregnancy. I don't think that's the right thing to be telling her.
Let's see what the tribunal thought yes. of that.
Indeed. The claimant then had two absences due to morning sickness in August. And on or around the 23rd of August, she was invited to the disciplinary meeting. Primary reason given for the meeting were her absences due to morning sickness, although apparently other issues were discussed that I don't think had been raised previously. The disciplinary meeting resulted in a written warning and a reduction in the claimant's hours. And the primary reason for the sanctions was the claimant's absences due to morning sickness. There was a letter confirming this, which said that the claimant could be dismissed if matters did not improve. And the director, the other director, when handing her the letter, said that it would be better if she looked for a new job.
Crikey.
So 15th of September, the original director asked the claimant to join her in the back office for a discussion. Claimant was not told what the meeting was about. There was nothing to indicate it was intended to be a disciplinary hearing. But at that meeting, it was said to the claimant that she had left early on the previous Friday. She was shown CCTV footage footage, which said that apparently demonstrated that she'd not been working, but had just been on her phone. Claimant disputed that she'd left early and that she'd not been working. The discussion became heated, and the director informed the claimant that her contract was being terminated, and no reason for that was given at the time, nor was the dismissal confirmed in writing. The claimant didn't appeal, but she did, of course, issue this claim for pregnancy discrimination.
Thank you, David. So looking at the claim, so there was a claim of unfair dismissal, and there was a claim under the Equality Act, and the tribunal said they were going to proceed on the basis of dealing with the discrimination claim under the Equality Act for three reasons. One, the claimant succeeded in the discrimination claim, then the unfair dismissal was rendered academic. Secondly, the test under the Equality Act, or I should say two, because I said one, the first one, two, the test under the Equality Act is broader than under the ERA. Pregnancy needs only to be the effective cause of dismissal or any other detriment in the discrimination rather than the sole or principal cause, as it is in the unfair dismissal claim. And third, or three, or thirdly, the unfair dismissal claim does not add anything in terms of remedy. The claimant could recover the same loss under both claims, and there would be no double counting. In fact, the unfair dismissal claim is more limited as it does not include compensation for injury to feelings. Okay, so that's that. Anyway, the tribunal said that there was no question that subjecting the claimant to a disciplinary process, issuing a written warning, or reducing her hours and dismissing her, that the respondent had treated her unfavorably. And indeed, the respondent did not seek to argue otherwise. The real question for the tribunal to determine, they said, was whether the treatment was done because the claimant was pregnant or because of a pregnancy-related illness. And the tribunal decided that they would draw the inference that the unfavorable treatment of the claimant by the respondent was because she was pregnant or because of her absences due to morning sickness. And they took into account various factors. So here's some of them. First, that there is the timing of the action taken against the claimant. The disciplinary process and the claimant's dismissal all took place in the 6 weeks after she informed them of her pregnancy. But prior to this, the claimant had not been subject to any formal disciplinary action over the previous 6 months of her employment. The respondent sought to say that there had been a plethora of issues with the claimant throughout her employment. But the tribunal said if there had been such issues, the fact that no formal disciplinary action was taken until after she announced her pregnancy lent more weight to the inference that it was, that the action taken was because of the pregnancy, and that was the effective cause of the disciplinary action. So second, the tribunal accepted that the primary reason for the formal disciplinary action and the warning which resulted from it was the claimant's absences due to morning sickness. That in itself, they said, is an overt act of pregnancy discrimination. Third, the respondent had told the claimant that she would need to take holidays for any GP or other appointments related to pregnancy. And you heard Dave's thoughts on that early on. He was obviously bang on, because the tribunal said this is wholly contrary to the claimant's statutory right to pay time off for antenatal care. So well done on that, Dave.
There we go.
Fourth, there is the failure of the respondent to produce any documentary evidence to support their case. So the tribunal draws an adverse inference from the absence of those documents. And then fifth, the tribunal found the evidence as to the reason for the dismissal to be confused. Ms. Donaldson, in her evidence in chief, stated she was concerned in light of the claimant's complaints of feeling bullied, how the claimant would cope with the appeal, and so decided to dismiss her. However, there was no evidence that she discussed this with the claimant at the time, and it was not put to the claimant in cross-examination. Further, nothing to this effect was pled in the ET3. Tribunal said that Ms. Donaldson went on to give evidence that it was not viable to employ the claimant because of her behaviour since the disciplinary meeting and outcome. And the tribunal said that's a very different reason than the reason initially advanced in Ms. Donaldson's evidence, and is also not one that was pled in the ET3, which set out issues of performance, conduct, and attendance as the reason for the claimant's dismissal. Tribunal said that, importantly, none of the reasons set out in the ET3 or in evidence were mentioned at the point of dismissal. No reason at all was given at any time or in any subsequent correspondence. And the tribunal considered that the respondent was now trying to backfill their reasoning for a decision which was taken in the heat of the moment. So not very impressed at all with the way they had conducted it. And the claimant, therefore, with injury to feelings and with loss of earnings, received an award of £22,150.33.
Yeah.
So obvious lessons there, I think, for employers.
Yeah. So many lessons.
Yeah.
One is something that we do talk about in our equality and diversity training, which is that you are perfectly entitled to manage women who are pregnant, mm-hmm. who've just been on maternity leave. That is absolutely fine. You're not obliged to ignore issues that might arise. But if you as an employer want to say, well, there have been always been issues, there have been lots and lots of issues, but it was only after her pregnancy was announced that we decided to deal with them. But that's just a complete coincidence. Be prepared for evidential difficulties in establishing that actually the motivating factor behind dealing with these issues was the fact that they'd always existed rather than the pregnancy, because the obvious question is, and it's quite a hard question to answer, well, if it was such a problem before, why didn't you deal with it before?
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay, well, that's that then.
That is, you'll be relieved to know.
That's it. That's that over. So we're going to be doing another one. And
sorry.
Yeah. And we'll get that out to you. But it's over.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.